Strap yourself in,
because we're set up, switched on, and ready to go.
Hello, Cosmos Country, and welcome back to another edition of First Team Podcast. I'm your host, John Frusciante. On this week's episode, I am joined by legendary soccer executive Peter Wilt. And Peter Wilt has a very deep, a very rich soccer resume in U.S. soccer. He has started and been involved in various professional soccer teams in the United States, from Chicago Fire in Major League Soccer, Indy 11 in the North American Soccer League, Forward Madison in the USL. The list goes on and on from women's soccer as well. He was involved with the Chicago Red Stars, and now they do play in the NWSL. He was also involved with a indoor side called the Chicago Riot. They once played in the Major Indoor Soccer League. So the list goes on and on and on in U.S. soccer with Peter Wilt, right? His name is very legendary in the game when it comes to building a brand new club. And there is success wherever he goes. And I think that's something that is very great for the league. I think that's something that we have to watch out for. As a Cosmos supporter, I remember going to Indy to watch Indy 11 at IUPUI, and they had a great fan base, right? I saw that firsthand. And Chicago NISA is most definitely going to be another success for the league and for the Chicago market. And I think that's great for all involved, just because we don't support another team in NISA, right? We're Cosmos supporters. But it is great to see, and I'm rooting for Peter Wilt and this new project and his new project in Chicago. And if you want to give them a follow, you can. Their Twitter account is Chicago NISA. So that's Chicago NISA on Twitter. Please give them a follow because they will have more announcements and more things coming real soon, which we should all stay on the lookout for. So here is my conversation with the one and only Peter Wilt. Peter, you have a great soccer resume, as we all know, starting with the Chicago Fire, Indy 11, and Forward Madison, and you worked with NISA earlier on and in the USL. So you bring a lot to the table, but can you please explain to my listeners what makes the Chicago market very special?
I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on, John. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, most people are like you, and they think my soccer career started with the Chicago Fire. But yeah, that was probably a decade into my soccer leadership origins. I actually started with the Milwaukee Wave back in the mid-1980s. Milwaukee Wave is actually the oldest pro soccer team that's still around. They started in 1984, and that's where I cut my teeth on soccer management for about 4 years before becoming general manager of the indoor team in Chicago, the Power. Did that for 4 years, won a championship there, worked in the league office for the CISL, went to Minnesota, where I launched the Minnesota Thunder as a professional team. They'd been around as an amateur team for a couple of years. Then I launched them as a professional team in 94, back when we had Tony Sana and Manuel and Gerard Lagos and Amos McGee, and a really good team. And we actually lost to the Long Island Rough Riders in the 95 USISL championship, the last pro soccer game played before MLS started. And then I left Minnesota, which actually morphed into the present-day Minnesota United over time. But I left in 97 to start what became the Chicago Fire. So that's a quick synopsis of my decade before the teams you mentioned. And it's been a good run. It's been fun. And Chicago is the market that I've spent most of my professional career. I grew up in or around Chicago, and I've worked there now for about 20 years with a various number of teams. I think this is going to be the fifth professional soccer team I've run in Chicago. I've started four of them, including the Chicago Fire and Chicago Red Stars, the women's team, the oldest professional women's team in America, as well as an indoor team, the Chicago Riot, and the aforementioned Chicago Power, and now Chicago NISA. So what makes it attractive, and I apologize, I've been talking for 4 minutes before answering your question, what makes Chicago attractive, I think, for this is that there is a void in the marketplace for a professional outdoor men's soccer team that that isn't the Chicago Fire, okay, or doesn't appeal maybe to the same people or in the same way that the Chicago Fire appeals to people. Chicago Fire is the only other outdoor men's professional soccer team in a market of 9 million people. You compare that to Chicago or to New York and L.A., the other two mega markets in this country, those markets each have 6 pro outdoor men's soccer teams, 2 MLS, 2 USL Championship, and 2 NISA teams each. So where there's 6 there, there's only 1 in Chicago. So I think there's a void from that respect. Geographically, you know, the Fire is playing now back at Soldier Field on the lakefront. And there's a lot of people that live west of the lakefront. So if we can find a venue west of the lakefront, almost by definition, will be easier for most people in Chicago to get to than to Fire games. But the truth is, this really isn't a competition between the Fire and the Chicago NISA team. There's, you know, literally we'll be in different leagues, and we'll appeal, I think, to different people for different reasons. It's a different audience. A price point will likely be different. The emotional connections we create with the fans will be different than those that the Fire uses to connect with fans. And there's, you know, I mentioned earlier, 9 million people in Chicago. Maybe a third or a little more than that care about soccer. And that's, you know, 3 million people. It takes maybe 50 to 100,000 people to care about a team enough to attend the games to support them. Whether it's MLS or USL or NISA, 50 to 100,000 people have to care enough to attend games. And if you've got 3 million people in a market that care enough about soccer, well, you should be able to develop a team that will be successful. And that's my challenge.
Yeah, yeah. And you talk about that soccer connection there. With the New York Cosmos, I remember talking to a fellow supporter, and this person was saying that compared to the Red Bulls and NYCFC, he thought that the soccer and the off-field product was much better at Hofstra Stadium back in the NASL days because him and his family were able to get close to the players, and it felt like one big family. And I think that's what makes lower division soccer so much more special compared to Major League Soccer.
Yeah, that intimacy, certainly from just a physical intimacy at the matches itself is a differentiation. But I think there's also an intimacy away from game day that... And we'll say lower division teams, but it can be a first division team that builds itself that way. Creating those connections, those emotional connections with fans, isn't something that is only can be done by lower division teams. I think it tends to happen, at least in the U.S., more with lower division teams because they tend not to be as corporate, not as focused on the dollar. They tend to roll up their sleeves and get involved in the community and do things on a one-on-one basis. And it's that interpersonal interaction that can really develop sustained relationships with fans. And, you know, I hope by definition it's not limited to a small number of people. I hope it's not a situation where, you know, once you get over X thousands of fans attending per game, you've jumped the shark and you can no longer have those emotional connections or intimacy with the fans. I'd like to think you could have 70,000 fans attending games and they feel a huge connection with the team. I think Atlanta is a version of that. Seattle's a version of that, and Portland is certainly a version of that, albeit, you know, smaller than Seattle and Atlanta by virtue of their limits of the stadium. But the relationship that those fans have with the team is that intimacy you were talking about, and it has nothing to do with the number of fans attending the games. I mean, it's not because, you know, there's only, you know, 8,000 fans going to games like in Detroit. You know, Detroit City has such a passionate connection between the fans and the players on the field and the front office and the community. But I don't think it's dependent on the crowds being small. You know, I'd rather think that it's because of that personal touch that the team has done. And now it's, you know, to the nth degree, because they've, along with Chattanooga FC, have instituted fan ownership. You know, you've got, you know, crowdfunded equity, and you achieve not only the sense of ownership, which is something I've always tried to do with the teams I start, is that you create this vested interest where the fans feel like they own the team. But now in Detroit and Chattanooga, you've got situations where they actually do own a part of the team, similar to the Green Bay Packers. And in Chicago, we're going to look at that. We're going to ask the fans if that's what they want to do. My guess is they'll say yes. I can't imagine why fans wouldn't want to have fan ownership. And then if they do, we'll sit down with them and try to develop a structure of what type of fan ownership model makes sense, what the benefits are, and truly give the fans a say in the operation and the development of the team itself.
Yeah, and I went to a Cosmos Indy 11 game at IUPUI, and you guys had this decent stadium, right? A college stadium with a very consistent fan base packed each week, but you still had that family atmosphere, which I thought was really special and really cool.
Yeah, I think a reason for that is that the Brickyard Battalion, the Supporters Association, Independent Supporters Association in Indy, actually existed before the team did. And they were very much responsible for the team developing in the first place. And they, at my urging, took an active role in the development of the team. And that's important. You can't just separate the fans from the team and have it. I mean, there needs to be an independence. A supporters group can't be run by the team by any means. But I think the opposite's not true. I think it's good if the supporters have a role in the operation of the team, right? Not the team having a role in the operation of the supporters. So in Indy, we had that. The leadership of the Brickyard Battalion was diverse. They were professional. They were passionate, and they were local. They were sold on local. And the team itself, Indy 11, fed off of that and built a local identity in large part because of the urging of the supporters. And having that local identity and connection is what gives fans a reason to support that local team, because it's not going to be the best soccer they can consume, right? They can turn on the TV or internet and get better soccer at less price. You know, we're going to charge them $20 or whatever. They can get ESPN Plus for $5 or $6 a month and get 100 games with better quality technical skills on the field. But it won't have that local appeal, that emotional connection that, if done right, the local soccer team will have.
You keep talking about that personal touch, right? That personal touch that every time you go into a certain market, that turns to gold. So can you talk more on that personal touch? If you have to list maybe three things that make a brand new team important in that market, what are those things?
Yeah. Well, it's actually, there's two general things you need to do, in my opinion, to have a successful new pro soccer team. One is you need to surround yourself, hire a good staff, right? You need talented, hardworking people with good character that communicate well. If you get those qualities in all or most of your staff members, that's half the battle. The other half of the battle for me is community outreach. It's asking the fans, the community, for their input in the development of the team. You know, it goes back to what I said earlier. It gives them a vested interest in it. And that's really a challenge in today's COVID world, because the best way, at least from my experience, of succeeding with the community outreach and engagement and getting the fans on board with this is in person, whether it's one-on-one, and I used to do that a lot with the startups of Forward Madison and Indy 11 and the teams in Chicago. Just take people out to breakfast, lunch, dinner, or drinks, and do two things. One is listen to them, get their ideas, and implement the good ones, or at least help them form a consensus with other folks that you talk to, so you can implement it. And then on the other hand, you give them information on what's going on with the team, giving them a peek inside the tent so they feel part of the process and empowered. Because most of the people you're going to meet with are almost by definition the influencers in the community, certainly in the soccer community, because those are the people you naturally are going to get in touch with as you're putting a new team together. And then they tell their friends and family and coworkers or fellow students about the information they're getting, and the news spreads virally through those folks. And in this COVID era, that's a tough thing to do. So instead of in-person meetings, whether it's one-on-one or small groups in soccer bars or town halls or larger groups with youth soccer board meetings or presentations to service organizations, chambers of commerce, that sort of thing, that has to be replaced. Zoom is a way to do it, and certainly we'll be doing Zoom meetings. I've been doing some already. There's phone calls, podcasts like this one to get the word out, social media, which, you know, we'd be doing that anyways. So it's not like that's necessarily replacing the in-person communication, but I think we need to rely on it more as a communication tool. And in a way, it's going back to the old days of, when I started the Chicago Fire, when there's a lot of phone calls. But, you know, that was also a lot of in-person stuff. So it's going to be interesting. We've got about an 11-month ramp up for our first game, looking at mid-August of 2021. We're a month into it. We've applied for approval. We expect to have the approval very shortly, and we'll launch our website at that point, likely announce our first staff hiring in addition to myself at that point, and we'll be on a roll. A lot of work to do, and every day is a day closer to the first game.
And the team name, right? Will that be a fan vote, or will that be a poll, or will you guys just come up with the branding?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in having the community involved in the brand development. Mm-hmm. And the identity of a team or the brand of a team is much more than just a name, right?
Yeah,
The brand or the identity of a team evolves over time. Certainly the name and the logo and the colors are a huge part of that, and it serves as the foundation, almost the beginning point. But over time, how the team interacts with the public, whether it's social media or in person, that helps build the identity of the team. In this case, it'll be similar to what I've done with Forward Madison and Indy 11 and the Red Stars. I think those three in particular, where we're going to have the fans submit names on our website when we launch that very soon. And we're going to encourage fans to submit names for the team that are connected to Chicago's history, tradition, culture, geography, or nature. And we're going to ask fans, when they submit the name suggestions, that they include a paragraph or so describing the relevance to Chicago. That'll force them to come up with ideas that will truly connect with the city. I celebrated the Chicago Fire's 23rd anniversary last Thursday. I was in Chicago meeting with a few folks, and I had a conversation with the gentleman who actually helped in the brand development of the Chicago Red Stars. And he pointed out that the Chicago Fire name is one of the few, if not only, Chicago sports team names in any sport that's really well connected to the city of Chicago. You know, the White Sox, the Cubs, the Bears, Bulls and Blackhawks a little bit, but not as much, really don't evoke a real connection to the city. The Bulls, I believe, are supposed to be a derivative of the old Chicago Union Stockyards and the cattle that went through. So I guess that there is a connection there, although they certainly don't play up that connection at all. The Chicago Blackhawks is more of a regional connection. The Black Hawk War was fought in parts of Illinois and Wisconsin and the Midwest. But the connection to the city of Chicago is relatively tepid. Whereas the Chicago Fire, not only is it connected to the a great Chicago Fire of 1871, but also to the Chicago Fire Department and firefighters. So that connection was strong. The Red Stars is also very strong, and we intentionally did it that way, played off the city flag, the stars in the city flag, which each represent historic significance with the city of Chicago. So we're going to ask for submissions from the fans, and then we're going to have a poll. We'll likely have 32 of the best and most interesting names. Sometimes the most interesting aren't the best, and vice versa. But we'll put those 32 out for a poll and let the fans narrow it down to 16, 8, 4, 2, and 1, finally, and have a champion. It'll be an advisory poll. So yeah, if something goofy gets pushed through, we won't be cornered into having to make it a permanent identity. But the fans will have a strong say in what the name of this team will end up being. Same with the colors of the team. Also with whether or not it's going to be a football club or a soccer club. I've always preferred soccer clubs, but, you know, in Madison we went with football club in large part because that's what the fans voted. We asked them, do you want an FC or SC or something else? And I think it was a 2-1 basis. They voted for FC. It also was alliterative with Forward Madison, so that helped as well.
Are there currently discussions with a potential head coach ahead of August?
There are. Yeah. I don't think we're going to announce a head coach until after the first of the year.
Okay.
But I've gotten a number of very good resumes. It's a good opportunity for a lot of coaches. View it as that. I think the market is a good one. I think I've got a pretty good track record of how I work with head coaches. I certainly give them the freedom to succeed, which you could also say I'm giving them the freedom to fail. I've got enough championships under my belt that I think for the most part interested coaches feel comfortable that I'll give them the right environment to put together a successful team.
And you spoke earlier about how difficult it was or how difficult it is to gather and talk to people during the COVID-19 pandemic that we're going through at the moment. But how do you plan as a brand new team for the summer of 2021 when we don't know what's in store for the pandemic, right? We don't know if there's going to be a second wave. So how do you plan or how do you try to look ahead to 2021 when we just don't know what's going on, right? For the past NISA season, fans weren't allowed in the stadiums. I think Chattanooga, they had a limited fan base for, I guess, a couple of games. So I guess it all goes down to the government guidelines or the state guidelines.
No, you're right. It's a little scary and mm-hmm. ominous of not knowing exactly what things are going to look like 10 months from now. Certain elements of putting a team together are not affected. I know I'm going to need to hire a head coach. I know I'm going to need to hire department heads for sales and marketing and operations and community relations. And so those things can go ahead. I know we're going to need to build a brand, and we're going to need to do community outreach. This team is going to be on a platform of making Chicago a better place through community engagement. We are going to not only espouse human rights, social justice, racial equality, we are going to act on that. We are going to work with the fans to develop ways to raise funds for those purposes, and to earmark funds to various causes that will make Chicago a better place. And our values will be reflective of Chicago's values. The makeup of our organization will reflect Chicago. Chicago is a multicultural place. It's diverse in every way. And it makes sense that our front office is that way. It makes sense that our technical staff is that way, and it makes sense that our team on the field reflects Chicago. So diversity is going to be important. So those sort of things can happen irrespective of a pandemic. And in some ways, it becomes more important that we engage in those efforts because we're in a pandemic. And working with fan representatives to help us in that regard is important. Where it gets tenuous is when we get closer to the start of the season, when we get to next fall. You know, it's less than a year away now. If there is not a vaccine, if the treatments are not improved, if people aren't wearing masks, if it's still a politicized issue, if we don't have rapid testing, yeah, it's going to be hard. And you know what? If that's the case, we may postpone our start. I don't know. We don't know. You don't know what it's going to look like 10 months from now. But if we have a vaccine that's in common usage, if we have rapid testing, better treatments for COVID, and mask wearing is normalized, then I will feel very comfortable about promoting this team, inviting them into our home, and making this team a model for how to safely support a local professional soccer team or a local professional sports team in the post-COVID era.
Lastly here, NISA has done a good job during a pandemic with the NISA tournament and having a national streaming deal. What are your thoughts on the new league, on the format, on the competition format, and what do you think the future is?
Well, I come from a biased position. My late partner, Jack Cummins, we launched this league 3 years ago, and I'm thrilled with the progress that's been made since I left to start Forward Madison, because honestly, when I left, I feared that the league would dissolve.
Okay.
Jack had passed away, and I had gone, and it didn't look real good. And thanks to the incredible work by some folks, including John Pruch, who's now the commissioner of the league, and some real independent soccer club leaders, you know, like the Cosmos and Chattanooga FC with Tim Kelly and Detroit City FC with Sean Mann and his group there, and the fans themselves. This league has not only survived, But as evidenced in the fall championship and the tournament in the bubble, it's thrived. I think, you know, for a couple of years, it was really not out of the woods. I think the league is now out of the woods. There's expansion. There's growth. It's hard to conceive because it's during a pandemic when you would think it would just crush a young, nascent soccer league. But instead, it's thriving. And I think you're going to see additional teams, which is a real sure sign of stability and growth. And I think that there's really good signs ahead that this league will rapidly grow. It will likely have some shrinkage at times, but there will also be growth. And I am so looking forward to the day when there's enough teams, when the discussion becomes not will NISA survive, but will NISA do promotion and relegation this year, or will they wait till the following year? And that's going to be exciting. You know, personally, I think there needs to be at least 24 teams before that happens, because there's travel issues once you split into a second and third division. You know, right when you get to enough teams when you can regionalize travel at 24, all of a sudden you're tempted to split into two divisions so you can do promotion and relegation, but then that wreaks havoc on the travel schedule. That being said, the importance of promotion and relegation and making that real is so important to this league, to this open system, as well as the lack of territorial rights. I'm so excited about enacting that. In New York, I think you're so fortunate now to have New Amsterdam and the New York Cosmos there. And someday I hope you have more NISA teams in that market. In Chicago, yeah. I didn't take on Chicago NISA hoping I would have the exclusive territory for 100 miles around Chicago. Mm-hmm. I want to have competing teams on the other side of town or across the street for that matter. That rivalry that will create will add stability to teams. It will force each of us to be as good as we can be on and off the field. And I think that's the strength of NISA in the future. NISA can grow by leaps and bounds. There'll be a tipping point where investors will look at the league and say, yeah, this is a structure that makes sense. This is how the sport is played around the rest of the world, and it's something that I want to be involved in. And they have a comfort level that the league is stable and growing and not going away. And I think that time is going to come sooner than most people think. The World Cup coming to the United States in 2026 is obviously a big spotlight that will help grow the sport at all levels in this country. And NISA will be a beneficiary of that. But I don't think it's going to need to wait until then for NISA to get its sea legs.
Thanks, Peter, for joining me on this week's episode. I really do appreciate it, and hopefully I can have you on again real soon.
Enjoyed it, John. Take care.
Thanks to Peter Wilt for joining me on this week's episode of First Team Podcast. I really do appreciate it. You can follow First Team Podcast on Twitter and on Facebook at First Team Pod. And please check out our brand new website at firstteampod.com. That is firstteampod.com. If you want to join the discussion, you can email the show at firstteampod@gmail.com. And I will read out your email and your thoughts on next week's episode of First Team Podcast. So thanks again to Peter Wilt. I really do appreciate it. And I will be back next week with another edition of First Team Podcast. Please keep in mind that we are moving to two episodes a week starting this week. On First Team Podcast, we will have two episodes, one on Tuesday and one on Thursday. The second episode will be with a former professional soccer player. You will see the full release on our website, firstteampod.com. Once again, that website is firstteampod.com. And I'm really looking forward to that because it will be very interesting to get the view of a former professional soccer player in the United States. And that will be a weekly thing, right? That will be a weekly conversation. And that will be a very up-to-date topical conversation each week. So I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope you guys are as well. And you will have that person, and we will release the name over the next couple of days. So I'm really excited, and very exciting times here at First Team Podcast. So thanks again to Peter. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, let's go New York Cosmos.